Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting.
Than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience.
With Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. Beginning, middle, or end of the year, it's always a great time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. Your questions make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Steve McIntosh, it's Edward. We're here, Steve and Ted in the morning on KNSS, 98.7 and 1330 KNSS. And we are live right now on the air. We're going to do a live broadcast of this of the goings-on this evening. And we'd like to welcome you on this beautiful Kansas evening coming out to the State Fair. By the way, here's the format. These cards are available in the back. And we ask that you fill them out and then bring them up. And Ted now will use them to ask questions of Senator Marshall.
Yeah, if you want to fill out those cards, if you have any questions, make sure there'll be staff members around that will help pick them up, like we have right here. And we'll be sure to get to all your questions tonight during this great town hall.
Now, we'd like at this time the posting of colors, led by Hutchinson American Legion Commander Judge Joseph McCarville. And now the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And now please join us with State Representative Emil Perquist singing the national anthem. Emil?
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hail at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, and the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave.
And those are amazing words, because Francis Scott Key wrote those words 210 years ago on this weekend.
Whoa.
When he was witnessing the Battle of Baltimore and the British were sent away. Couldn't get Fort McHenry.
How about that? Yeah. Been making history. All right, without further ado, let us introduce U.S. Senator from Kansas, Dr. Roger Marshall.
Yay.
Yay. How are you, Steve? Thank you. Thanks for being here. Welcome, everybody. Just thanks to everybody for coming tonight. A couple people I for sure want to recognize: American Legion Post 68, Colonel Judge Joseph McCarville. How about another hand for our honor guard? The American Legion means so much to so many of us. How about Representative Emil Perquist for his star-spangled banner? You know, it's always fun for me when a baritone walks out to sing it rather than a soprano.
Yeah, they asked me to do it, but I am a soprano.
I bet that's true. And I especially want to welcome Steve McIntosh and Ted Woodward as well. They have 20 years running, the longest morning show in Wichita. Y'all do a great job, and we're grateful for that. That's 1330 AM,
yep.
98.7 FM. Maybe I could get a job.
Yeah, probably.
And this is streaming live on KNSS.
Yeah, we're live right now.
And on the air, yeah.
And on the air. And Facebook Live is streaming for us, for the folks back home. And for the folks that are on Facebook Live, they can message in questions. Don't ask me how to do that. Well, we got staff here. And the last people I should thank is my staff, Katie Sawyer, and all of our team worked in this. How about a hand for Katie and all my team as well? So thank you very much. My goal tonight is to get through as many questions as we can, as opposed to spending 10 minutes on one subject. I hope we hit every topic that your folks are interested in. I'm not going to give you the long answer. I'm going to do the short answer, and I'm ready to rock and roll. What's the first question?
I've got a question here from Jacob, Jacob Unruh from Sublette. He says, is there anything you can do in the Senate to stop illegal immigration?
From Sublette, way out there. Well, I think that the obvious answer is to secure the border. I fought hard for that since day number one. I think it's going to take an executive branch that's interested in doing that, that wants to do it. People, the other question I get, does Joe Biden and Kamala Harris not know how to secure the border? But the challenge is they don't have the will to secure the border. And I think that's a great difference as people go into this election, who they're going to choose from. I think the biggest difference I can think of the two people running is one is committed to securing the border, one not so much. So we have the laws to do it, but we have to have the will to do it as well.
You've been to the border. Are those experiences eye-opening?
Yeah, so I've been there four times, I think it's very informing. First of all, is to recognize the humanitarian crisis that comes across the border. When I went down there five years ago, for the first time, what I recognized is that a lot of 27-year-old single men had these 16-year-old daughters with them. At least they were saying they were daughters. So we went back to D.C. and got DNA testing for them. Just to see these people after they traveled thousands of miles. They're exhausted. They're dehydrated. So many things. They may have got other communicable diseases. We're seeing an uptick of tuberculosis across the country now, as I predicted 3 years ago as well. So it's very informative. And just to see our Border Patrol, how hard they're working, and to see the coordination with the cartel coming across the border, and then all the gotaways. There's been 2 million gotaways, people we saw crossing the border, but we couldn't help because we were sitting here attending to some of the other folks as they were crossing the border. Just overwhelmed.
Something we're seeing in local crime, fentanyl coming across that border. That's extremely dangerous, fentanyl.
Yeah, so one pill can kill. We've worked really hard. We led a big statewide education. We worked with local law enforcement, all the Nurses Association, the health departments, getting that word out. And Steve and Ted, the great news, in Sedgwick County, I think last year 15 young adults died from fentanyl poisoning, and now this year just two or three. And I think part of it's that education. So thanks for helping us get that out. We just had a town hall, though, again yesterday in Newton. And just, you know, in Newton and Heston, that we're still seeing fentanyl out there, that we're still losing a Kansan every day on average, that we're using Narcan 10 or 15 times every day in this state, or we'd have 10 or 15 more loss of young adults.
We have a question here from Trevor from Wichita, Trevor Hines. How does the future of ethanol look for the state of Kansas? How does that all fit into the equation?
Yeah, I think, again, the future of ethanol depends somewhat on who wins the White House. I think that President Trump is committed to ethanol. I think he's committed to E15. And I want to back up and just say how important ethanol is to agriculture, though. Maybe 20% of corn across the country is turned into ethanol. A fair amount of our sorghum, as we call it around here, Milo, is turned into ethanol as well. So President Trump has supported E15, but we're going way beyond that. Just 2 or 3 weeks ago, we were out in Liberal, Kansas, and working with some folks at their ethanol plant that's going to take a stock, corn stock or wheat stock, and turn it into renewable jet fuel, believe it or not, working with Southwest Airlines.
Yeah, and that's just waste. That's something that would otherwise not be used, and we can use it for something great.
Yeah, you got it. So it was waste that we're going to turn into renewable jet fuel, and excited to visit with President Trump a little bit more about that. If we don't do it, Europe's going to do it. But ethanol, the last thing I would say about ethanol, I I'm also very committed to the environment, wanting to leave this world cleaner, healthier, and safer than we found it. And what ethanol does is it's an octane. It raises the octane in the gas, so the tailpipe emissions are cut in half. When you use the E15, the modern engines of the last 20 years have been built to use these high levels of ethanol. So I think it has a great future. I'm just disappointed that the Biden-Harris administration never considers as part of the solution. That it's, when they talk about green energy, they don't ever give ethanol any credit for it. But I think it's technology we have today, and it helps the American farmer.
A question from Arlene Westbrook from Lindsberg. She'd like to know if you'd like to buy a dollar horse.
Dollar horse.
Yeah. Who's the top Republican behind the scenes making the decisions? The Republicans had some great candidates. Couldn't we have chosen someone without, what is that word? Without something. Baggage? I don't know.
Okay.
Republicans, candidates, go ahead.
So who's making the Republican decisions? If you know Republicans very well, we're not lemmings. We don't all stand in line and just jump off the cliff together. We have very robust discussions in the caucus. We have lunch together, Republicans, every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday for about an hour to an hour and a half. And when they say the United States Senate is the greatest, some term they use, debaters in the world, that's when we get down to it. I think that we're all 49 of us, or is there 48 of us, are very independent. And I don't feel like one person is running the show at all in any way, shape, or form. On the House side, of course, you have Mike Johnson, who's the Speaker of the House. He has such a very smooth, short majority, I think by 5 or 7 people. He doesn't have as much power as we would hope he would have. So I don't think it's one person. Obviously, Mitch McConnell is the leader. He stepped down at the end of this election, so he is very much a lame duck and very much a fight to going on who's going to replace him as leader. I don't know who that's going to be. We have John Cornyn from Texas is running for it, John Thune from South Dakota, and Rick Scott from Florida. They're all very qualified. As my track coach over at Butler County used to say, don't tell me, show me. I'm watching what they do. I'm watching who's the most interested one of them to balance the budget.
All right. We'll stay in the nation's capital. Roberta from Great Bend has a question. She says she's very proud of you. Roberta asks you, what is your biggest challenge living and working in D.C.?
My biggest challenge in D.C., it's family and my church. I typically leave D.C. Thursday night and get to Kansas City or Wichita. As you all know, Great Bend is a 2-hour drive from Wichita, a 4-hour from Kansas City. Just until recently, Wichita did not have a direct flight. Now they do, thank goodness, so that's very helpful. So it's the travel. It's the travel, which is so hard on me and on the family. So we spend really a day getting there if you live in Kansas and a day getting back. So I don't get to my home church very often. I don't see my family as much. I would just add that Washington, D.C. has become a very unsafe place to live. That I would not let my wife walk anywhere except directly from our little apartment to the Capitol. It's not safe for her to walk any other direction. Almost every week, a staff member that works on Capitol Hill is assaulted walking home. It's horrific that the leadership in Washington, D.C. has allowed our nation's capital to deteriorate so much.
I have a question from Mason in Wichita. Can we get an update on the farm bill?
Finally, somebody asked me about the farm bill. Yeah. So I wish I could say it's almost there, but it's not. We're really stuck. And I just want to emphasize that a farm bill certainly is important to agriculture, but 85% of the money is for food programs. So in a farm bill, the farmer benefits from about 5% of the farm bill. The number one goal, I've been told over and over, and I see a few farmers in the audience, is we need to have crop insurance. And the cost of crop insurance, like everything for a farmer, has went way up. A record drop in net farm income over the last year. Inputs are high, the commodity prices are down. Gosh, it just seems like this is the story when I was growing up. So we have tripled the food funding. We went from $60 billion a year to $180 billion a year since the last farm bill. Let me say that again. Those numbers are big. We went from $60 to $180 billion a year for the food programs. Think about SNAP programs and food banks, those type. And they're all great programs. I'm glad that we live in a country that's not going to let anybody go to bed hungry. So we've given, and really that's the Democrats' mantra, is the food programs. Republicans support them, but we would like work requirements. We'll come back to that. So we've given them, we've tripled their nutrition budget. We would like a smidgen, like a 10% increase in help with crop insurance. Again, crop insurance, like many insurance products, have really went up drastically. You just sat here and you drive from my home in Stafford County to here, and boy, we had a bad wheat crop. It looks like we got a bad milo crop as well. Was talking to someone a second ago that lives down by Pratt. They're not going to have a good milo crop or soybean crop this year as well. So we got to put crop insurance back into the farm bill. We're not going to get it done until after the election. I can tell you, if the Republicans control the Senate, we're going to have a much better farm bill as far as Kansas is concerned.
Just to clear up, the farm bill is not something that's passed, supposedly, every year. Isn't it a multi-year agreement?
Right. So it's a five-year bill, and I've got to get it right. I'm not going to sign off on something just to sign off on it. I've got to get it right. The other problems with it, they're messing with our ARC and PLC programs, and I won't bore everybody. If you're a farmer, you know what those are. They actually want to decrease the reference prices for wheat and milo. And then lastly, on the conservation programs, they want to put guardrails around it that my Kansas farmers won't be able to use them.
We have a question from Tracy from Pretty Prairie. Tracy, and I know you and the Kansas contingent have been working on this. What's the progress on cleaning the voting rolls, getting a bill passed to get non-citizens off the rolls and keeping them from voting? And I know you've been right on this.
So we are the leader of this bill on the Senate side that would require proof of citizenship when you go register to vote. Proof of citizenship when you go enrolled to vote. Is that not just a common sense thing? But Joe Biden and Chuck Schumer have said they opposed it. So Chuck Schumer is not going to let us even vote for it on the Senate. The House has already passed it, and they've attached it to the year-end funding. And I'll try not to bore you with all the politics of this, but the government's going to run out of money again the end of September. So they were trying to use that as leverage, saying, okay, we got to pass funding for the government. Let's attach this bill to it, again, that requires proof of citizenship when you register to vote. And Chuck Schumer's had a fit and says he's going to blame the Republicans if we shut the government down. So I'm afraid it's stuck, and we'll have to live to fight another day.
From Donna in Great Bend, I hear Vice President Harris talking about money to hand out to open small businesses. Why can't we get some tax relief for small businesses who are working hard to keep the doors open? Taxes are eating up all the profit, says Donna.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of small businesses. I happen to own one once. I know what it's like to sign the front side of a paycheck. I did it every other week for 25 years. When I talk to small business owners, what they tell me their biggest concerns are, first of all, starting a business is access to capital. And number two is regulations to start the business. And then that's just the number of regulations have went up exponentially under Joe Biden to the tune of trillions of dollars of income loss. So I think the regulatory environment would help that small business more, is to turn that down. A small business doesn't have an HR person, three lawyers, and a CFO. It's usually one person doing all those types of things. So my focus is access to capital. We've been working a lot with the Small Business Administration. We've had the SBA administrator out here twice in the last 3 years, working with banks to figure out why they don't want to do SBA loans. And guess why they don't want to do them? Too many regulations, that it takes them days and weeks and years to go through the process, and it just isn't worth it anymore. And then the other parts of the small business is a lack of people for the jobs that they have. So trying to, we're here in Hutchinson, Kansas, and Hutch Community College, one of the greatest educators for folks that are trying to, jump from high school into a new job career field with their tech programs is one example, which I trying to emphasize that part of it as well.
Talk about the importance of small business for just a minute as opposed to the entire business community in America. What percentage is small business? It's pretty – have you got a number for us?
It is, Steve. I think it is 80% of the businesses in Kansas are small businesses, and 50% of the employees are small businesses. Someone can fact check me, but I bet I'm close. I bet it's 80% of the total business and 50% of the employees. again, I think it is the backbone of the economy. What they do is they give us stability. You know, we live with the aerospace industry. They'll go up and down. I love those jobs too. But the small businesses give us stability. If we lose one of them, it's not the end of the world. And by the way, the best way to grow new jobs is if each one of those small businesses would just add one or two people. And guess what? The jobs are there, but we can't get people to come back to work. We have 7 million healthy American men of working age that aren't working in America. 7 million healthy American men that have chosen not to work.
We have a question from Edward on education. Edward's from Hutchinson. He says, if student scores have dropped every year since the federal education system was implemented, shouldn't we shut it down and bring it back to the states? I know this gets brought up every so often. Is it the Department of Education? What's it for?
Yeah. So I'm ready to have that conversation. I wasn't ready 2 years ago. I want a plan. I don't want to just end the Department of Education tomorrow without having some type of a plan. I think that school choice is now part of that discussion. And again, it's a balance. School choice may not be the right thing for rural Kansas, but a lot of the schools are letting us down. And I don't see any other solution except to increase the competition. But to your point, the Department of Education has grown. And remember, President Eisenhower started this. It's now got an $80 billion budget and 4,000 employees. I would much rather lower our taxes, just keep those locally, and get rid of the Department of Education. I don't see the value that they bring. Again, they focus on the regulatory environment. I have faith in the school boards and the parents here in Kansas that they're going to lead our schools in the right direction. So I'm ready to have the conversation. I need to understand what's going to happen with the money.
Doug from Hutchinson, what's being done to prevent the use of eminent domain to acquire Kansas land for renewable energy?
Right. So this is something we've been fighting for 5 years now. I know it's just now hitting the headlines. The Grain Belt Express is already done. Okay. It's going to start. Is that the name of it, Katie? The Grain Belt Express is already done, taking energy, electricity from, let's just say, Dodge, taking it to St. Louis and Chicago. That's a done deal. It's a half-mile-wide project. Most of the landowners have signed that and didn't complain any about it, so we stayed out of it. But now the Department of Energy wants to take a five-mile-wide swath of space, basically beside this, 5 miles wide. So what we've been fighting for 5 years is the federal government superseding Kansas FCC. Is that the right? KCC's, Katie, right? The KCC is the one that would have jurisdiction over it. And in 2021, Congress passed a bill to let FERC do just that. I voted against the bill. You should look up and see who voted for and against. It's called the Bilateral Infrastructure Bill. And so that gave FERC, which is the federal arm that regulates this type of thing, the ability to supersede Kansas's KCC. I encourage you. So, we've been fighting it for years already. We've had a couple victories. Get this, Steve and Ted. Kansas exports about 80% of the electricity from the wind. We export about 80% of it.
That drives me crazy when I hear that.
We're keeping 20% of it, but we're paying 80% of the cost to send it out of here, which is one of the reasons Kansas utilities are up. We did have the lowest in the area. Now it's among the highest, if not the highest as well. So I need your help. I think if you go to our website, what's our website called? Marshall.Senate.gov, Marshall.Senate.gov, and you'll see an address, and it's maybe on one of your handouts where you can send a letter to the Department of Energy as well saying you don't like this and you don't want it. It's not a done deal. I'm fairly optimistic we can slow them down. So we are fighting it tooth and nail. I appreciate Senator Moran's help. Congressman Estes helping us. Congressman Tracy Mann is helping us as well. We had 600 people show up at a town hall in Larned, Kansas one night to be upset. No one was there if they were happy about it. You can't get 600 people to show up in Larned, Kansas unless there's free beer and barbecue. Maybe a K-State game on a big screen. How about those Wildcats?
How about it, yeah.
Ema.
Just a quick follow-up. Why do they want a five-mile?
Why do they want a five-mile swath? Who would know? They don't know if they need one line, three lines. They don't know where they're going to put it. It's the federal government. They're here. They're from the government. They're here to help you.
All right. George from Greensburg. George says, are you optimistic or pessimistic about the future for America and the world? Big question there.
Yeah. So I am. And certainly I could spend the rest of the night talking about all the warts of America, and we are at a crossroads. There's no doubt. And I'll come back to the crossroads, I think, later. But the hope is people. Everywhere I go across the state of Kansas, everywhere I go as I meet people across the country, there's people like us that most Americans just want a safe place to raise their family. They want it to be affordable to raise their family. They want their children to have a shot at the American dream. They'd like to own a house. They'd maybe have a fishing boat, maybe a pickup truck and a couple dogs. And that's really their aspirations. They want to be part of their, you know, take care of their family, be part of a community. And those are their goals. But right now, I think we have the tail wagging the dog. I'm very optimistic that there's going to be a change. I think we're finally at the point where this, as President Reagan called it, this silent majority is ready to say enough, that we're going to take back our federal government and we're going to take back control of our local schools, all those types of things. So I'm optimistic. We got to get our schools right. We've got to get our schools right, not with federal government rules, but by letting parents control it.
And George had a quick follow-up question. Is the Constitution, as is, working good enough?
I think yes. The answer is yes. Certainly, I get frustrated. Again, I think the White House ignores the Constitution sometimes. They're practicing censorship. We've seen over and over again working with big technology, trying to censor conservative thought. I think it's great as is. I can't think of what I would change. I'd like to add something to it. I'd like to add term limits. There's a few things like that need to be addressed. I would add term limits to it, and that's the only thing I could think of in up here on the stage.
You're listening to a live broadcast of a town hall meeting with U.S. Senator Roger Marshall. We are in Hutchinson, Kansas, this afternoon. Steve and Ted are on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS.
And a big crowd, a nice crowd. Thank you for coming out here. It's at capacity. I don't think it's got 10,000 people, but we're getting close.
I got a follow-up here from Lee on a topic that we've hit a little bit here. It says, I understand that the SAVE Act, a move designed to prohibit illegals from voting in our elections, is to be attached to the continuing resolution, the CR. A little more technical here. What do you think the chances are that it would pass the Senate? That's from Lee.
Right, so I'll dive down a little bit deeper. So this SAVE Act is the legislation I referred you to before that requires proof of citizenship when you register to vote, as well as proof some type of form of ID when you go vote as well. So the House is trying to pass that attached to the continuing resolution. So right now we're trying to keep the government open. The fiscal year ends on September the 30th. It's always disappointing to me that we get up to these strike midnight moments and we haven't done anything yet with it. And again, that's pre-planned, though. This is exactly what Chuck Schumer wants. This is what the White House wants. They want to write the funding for the next year. I think where Republicans are at this point is to do what we would call a continuing resolution and fund it from now till the end of December. See what happens with the elections. If things go out right, I think we come back, we pass the farm bill, we work with President Trump's team on what a budget looks like under his auspices. I would love to see the SAVE Act attached to the continuing resolution, but I think it's a moonshot, a 1% chance in the end of the day that makes it happen. Chuck Schumer will get to midnight on September the 30th and say, if you don't drop this, we're going to shut the government down. They control 90% of the national media, and they'll blame the Republicans for this right before a very important election.
We have a question from Noah from Manhattan. Noah crossed out his last name. Is it Noah Smith? I'm just kidding. No, it's Noah. Noah says, what are your thoughts on the Biden administration and the whole student loan forgiveness? He called it a scheme.
Well, it's
probably a good word.
Yeah. So it's unconstitutional, first of all. And I think the courts... even the Supreme Court, I believe, has reviewed this as well to say it's unconstitutional. And beyond that, it's not right. It's not fair. We all, as my dad said, you made your bed, you get to sleep in it. My graduating class, El Dorado, 200 of us. Some of us went to college. Some of us went to community college. Some of us joined the military. Some worked at the refinery. And some of us, I went to Butler County Community College rather than borrow money. In medical school, I joined the Army Reserve rather than borrow money. So those aren't bad things. And everyone in this room has done the same thing. We've all made choices, and we need to live with those choices. I think it's the White House appropriating money, because someone has to pay for this, right? It's not that they forgive the loans and the banks say, oh, we don't have to repay this. We'll end up paying them. So it's not fair, it's not right, and it's unconstitutional. And glad to see it got struck down again in the last week or two.
Jim from Hutchinson writes, will you get property taxes lowered and lower our state income tax? He's concerned about taxes.
Yeah. Certainly the volume I hear at my business roundtables, this is just a top three issue for folks. We did 60 roundtables in August, and we went from Elkhart to Atchison, from Johnson City to Johnson County, places in between as well. And everyone wanted to talk about property taxes. So first of all, this is a state issue, but that doesn't excuse me from not leaning in and tell you what I feel, right? Think about this. We're paying about 50% more for property taxes in Kansas than Oklahoma. You know, comparing apples to apples, that for the value of a house, we're about 50% higher than Oklahoma, and we are more than twice as high as Colorado. So people have a reason to be complaining. I think what I can do at the federal level, though, is going back to this inflation issue. As your value of your house has went up, so have the property taxes with it. And whatever else you're paying property taxes on it, I'd be remiss to not to say that the state representatives are responsible for 20% of the property taxes approximately, and then the county is the other 80%, basically. Sometimes some cities level some, but it's 20% at the state, 80% at the county. As all those properties have went up in value, your taxes have went up with them, so I need to keep working on inflation. I think I know a good plan how to slow that down, and it's not Kamala Harris's plan, it's Donald Trump's plan. And I hope hopefully someone will ask me about that later. But I'm very concerned about it. You think about the cost of a mortgage payment has doubled in the last 3 years. Between the values going up for housing, the interest rates, and then you throw on top of that your insurance on it, and all of a sudden you've got some real challenges.
And that affects a ton of people. All right, Tim Bergkamp from Pretty Prairie. And this is something we probably don't want to talk about or think about, but Tim asks, how close to nuclear war are we? Very sobering.
How close are we to nuclear war? So I don't think we are. I really don't. Sunday, I was behind closed doors with President Zelensky. And Monday, I was with the NATO General Secretary. And I don't think that we're close at all. Is it a mess over there? Yes. There's messes across the continent. And I think it's the disease caused by Joe Biden's weakness, that the weakness in the White House has led to all these thugs that are out of control right now. I think we have some tough decisions to make in Ukraine. Are we going to allow them to shoot American-made missiles at military sources in Russia? Are we going to let retired NATO pilots fly the F-16s? So we send them F-16s, and it's going to take a year and a half to train their pilots. It's like we make Ukraine fight this war with one hand behind our back. Look, I'm not happy about us being in Ukraine at all. I've said for several years I'm not going to fund Ukraine anymore until we secure our own border, that we have to take care of America first. I feel horrible for the people of Ukraine. I detest Mr. Putin. He's a murderer. He's a thug. He's all those types of things. I get that. But Europe has to step up. We are funding that war over there for all practical purposes. We have 105,000 troops in Europe. We're doing our part. Europe needs to do their part. No, I don't think we're close to nuclear war. That was never, I think, a serious response from Mr. Putin at this time. Unless he was attacked, I don't think he would use nukes.
This is actually a follow-up. It wasn't meant to be, but Emily from Alden in Rice County, concerned about U.S. weapons being deployed into Russia. Rationale for this? Is this just poking the bear?
Yeah. You know, as a physician, you weigh their every case and say, what are the benefits and what are the risks? What are the benefits of recommending radiation treatment for a young lady with ovarian cancer and chemotherapy, and what are the risks? So I think it is a very calculated risk. The sad thing is we didn't have to be here. We didn't have to be here. If Afghanistan had never happened, I don't think we would even be here. So it's so frustrating that we have to clean up Joe Biden and Kamala Harris's mess. I totally understand what you're saying. I don't have a black or white answer for you. You're absolutely right. We're poking the bear. But we were poking the bear when we were talking about making Ukraine a NATO country. And Putin responded accordingly. So, yes, we're poking the bear. On the other hand, we've got to stop him where he is. If he's going to bomb civilians, there needs to be some type of a response. Here's one more frustrating thing I learned from President Zelensky. 35 nations across the world, including America, are sending chips to Russia to make missiles that are attacking Ukraine. I mean, how asinine can you get?
Computer chips? We're talking about computer chips.
Yeah, computer chips. And I understand sometimes it's a challenge. One chip, you could use the same chip. Maybe it goes in a toaster. Maybe it goes in a missile. But 80% of them flow through China. This is why you just can't do business with China. Taiwan is sending chips to Russia, a lot of them. And here we are saving their tails as well. We have to stop being the savior of the world and get our we need to get our house in order.
You're listening live to a town hall with U.S. Senator from Kansas, Dr. Roger Marshall, on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, and we are coming live from the Kansas State Fair in the Encampment Building tonight. We have a great crowd with us. I can't believe we've gone past the halfway mark, and I don't think anyone has said the word inflation yet. You alluded to prices, but inflation is something I think that is just on everyone's minds.
Yeah. So, again, we work really hard. We do telephone town halls. We're out there talking to people. 1A and 1B concern of Kansans are the open border, safety and security, let's call that 1A, and 1B is the cost of gas and groceries. And though the cost of gas and groceries have stabilized somewhat, inflation is cumulative. So all of us are paying at least 20% more today for those basic necessities than we were 3 years ago. In my house, it feels like 30 or 40%. What's not coming down is the cost of housing, the cost of childcare, and the cost of insurance. And that's what I'm hearing loud and clear. I think we should journey back and think about it. Again, this is the choice. I think people have this big choice, this crossroads, as we come to November. What caused inflation? I think what caused inflation were Joe Biden and Kamala Harris's policies. They borrowed an extra $6 trillion from our grandchildren. When the federal government borrows that much money, they have to turn around and open their printing press. And when all that cash hits the door, it influences inflation, and the interest rates come up. And then they declare war on American energy, and gasoline and natural gas prices go up. Energy is an inflation multiplier. If you think about anything in your life, any manufacturing or my deal where you're running a hospital, whatever it is, a farmer, the biggest input costs are arguably fertilizer and fuel, and the fertilizer derived from natural gas to make the nitrogen. So, you know, to me, the solutions are out there that are very clear is to go back and institute the Trump policy. So what do? You slash regulations, you cut taxes, you cut spending. You set American energy free. You set American agriculture free, American manufacturing free. You start doing new trade agreements. You made trade agreements Joe Biden has done?
Zero.
So Joe Biden's done zero trade policy. Donald Trump gave us USMCA. He gave us South Korea. He gave us Japan. And all of those are so helpful to American farmer. Our number one ag partner for Kansas is now Mexico, has replaced China because of that agreement. The brightest star on American agriculture right now is beef. And a lot of that beef is going to South Korea and to Japan as well. Think about Kamala Harris's policies. She's dodged this question in the debate. And then again yesterday on a radio interview when they asked her about inflation, what she talks about is mowing her lawn, right? So don't take my word for it. Google it. So she wants to talk about mowing her lawn as her solution to inflation. All of her solutions are really government subsidies. So she wants to make, how does she make housing more affordable? How does she make health care more affordable? She gives subsidies to those that are in the lower income bracket. But that doesn't help you and me. I actually think housing subsidies will drive up the price of housing for the rest of us. So I think that's a very clear, if we keep doing the Kamala Harris thing, where she gives subsidies, where she raises the taxes, where she increases spending, that's going to drive more inflation. Again, it just couldn't be more obvious to me. It's interesting, the independents that are left that haven't decided yet out there, it's only 5% of the country has decided. This is by far and away, it polls like about 80% of them, this is their number one concern.
Rick from Hutchinson. How can you say that Trump is committed to controlling the southern border when Trump and Republicans tanked a very good border bill? That was bipartisan and considered to be a very good bill.
Yeah, so with all due respect, it was a horrible bill. It was a horrible bill, and it did not address the two biggest issues of the people coming across their border illegally. It did not address the amnesty issue, as well as the parole program as well. And it, so when it didn't address that, could have accounted for at least 60%, if not more, of the 12 million people that crossed the border illegally. There were some good things in the bill, but at the end of the day, I think things would have been worse. And we've seen now, suddenly, Joe Biden's seen the light, and he's instituted some of the Trump policies, and those numbers are going down. Now, they're not as low as he's saying they're going down, but it was an attempt on our part. Chuck Schumer was never serious about negotiating. They got in the rope, and it didn't turn out well for us. I would have never trusted him. I would have never trusted them to do that negotiation. I don't negotiate with people that aren't honest.
Leslie from Hutchinson, once again, we're talking about spending. It says, what's being done to stop the runaway spending now? The debt, spending, trillions and trillions, it just never stops.
Right. So what I'm working on is a budget process, and I've been working on this for a couple years now. The federal government has not done a meaningful budget in decades, okay? So what I'm trying to do is write legislation that would force us to go through a budget process where the president has to give us a budget in a timely fashion, where the Senate Budget Committee, which I'm on, like come in January, is sitting there writing what the budget should actually look like. You can't run your family, you can't run a business, you can't run a church without a budget. So I think that's the best thing we could do is go to this budget process and then force us to bring this legislation to the floor one bucket at a time. There's 12 buckets of funding for the federal government, 12 buckets of money. They're supposed to go through a subcommittee process, a committee process, and then go on the Senate floor. I want to bring those one at a time and have my as far as I'm concerned, what a senator is supposed to do is be able to strip out an amendment. So if Nancy Pelosi has a $6 billion bridge to nowhere, I want to bring up an amendment to say, let's strike that. And then let's let her defend in front of everybody on television, what is this pork all about? I think if we brought those up to the American public, again, one bucket at a time, I think senators would be scared to death to put some of the things in there. So we need a regular order process where we're getting this done before the September 30th deadline. We're rolling that legislation out now, and we presented it to the entire Republican caucus about 6 months ago, trying to be very thoughtful about it. And I think that's the best solution, is to come up with a budget, and then we've got to go back and start slashing all the waste. I would guess in every agency, there's at least 25% waste, fraud, and abuse.
Melford from Plevna, are you aware of the 2018 addition to the Farm Bill and grant addition to the current Farm Bill that promotes states adopting the UPHPA? Are you familiar with that? 23 states, it says here, have adopted it so far. That doesn't yet include Kansas. The UPHPA removes state laws that let one forced the sale of a family farm.
Wow,
that's pretty.
Okay, so I don't want to jump into the specifics, but I do know how important the estate tax is to American agriculture. And again, Kamala Harris wants to change the estate tax laws, where she's going to go after it to cause just that. Is when you pass on the family farm, the heirs will have to sell a fourth of the land just to pay the taxes. I'll look into the more specifically. Certainly, I understand how important, though, the estate tax is, and really to all American businesses when we're trying to pass those businesses on to family members. Worked with one of the small businesses I think of are the people that distribute beer, believe it or not, like Budweiser distributors or Coors distributors are often held by families, and then trying to pass them on, everyone would be impacted by the estate tax. So I'll look into the specifics of that.
We have a Daryl from Marion and Linda from Wichita, both asked very similar questions. Daryl, what are we doing to keep foreign investors from buying our land? And Linda, even more specific, how do we stop China from buying up farmland near our military bases?
Right. So again, this is something I've been working on for at least 3 years when it was first brought to our attention. What I'm trying to do is get the Secretary of Agriculture a position on the committee that does just this. So there's a committee at the federal government level that reviews all foreign investments. And for whatever reason, agriculture has never been considered. And to me, agriculture, food is national security, and it needs to be on there. The situation is probably worse than you ever thought of. If you think about, China owns about a fourth of the pork processing, and Brazil owns about a fourth of the beef processing. So it isn't just the land, it's the value chain of the food going through from the farmer through to the grocer as well. So I think that all those should be reviewed for what you're describing. The state of Kansas has some good laws with it. And I think what I'm seeing is that some of the states are doing a better job, more aggressive job addressing this as well. But certainly that farmland next to a military base would approach that national security issue to me.
Gary from Hutchinson, how do you stand on making sure that Social Security is adequately funded?
So I was sent to Congress to save Social Security and Medicare. That's the way I look at it. My job is to save those, just like Bob Dole saved them several decades ago as well. And there's no simple solution. But I have several, I think, really good ideas. You'll think about, my legs are getting tired here. Social Security and Medicare are funded by people that are working. So those 7 million people that I'm talking about that are healthy, able-bodied men, let's get them to work and get them contributing. I think that inflation doubly impacts someone on a fixed income like Social Security as well. So I think by slowing down inflation, I'm going to be slowing down the amount of money needed for the Social Security as well. Again, there's a lot of waste, abuse, and fraud in there as well. I do think we're going to have to consider raising the contributions by people that, I think it's above $171,000. Yeah, I'm close. The number that people stop paying into some of that. I think we're going to have to raise those number. I think there's a series of dials that we're going to have to change to make it feasible. The last thing I would say is a strong economy floats all boats. So if we have a stronger economy and people are working and they're making more money, then they're able to contribute more strongly to those. I think we're going to have to consider letting folks invest their Social Security money into some type of a secure plan that has a better return on investment, though, than what the federal government has given them. It's not simple. It's not easy. And it'll probably take a second-term president to lead this charge.
Melissa from Salina says, how are you helping lower prescription drug prices?
Yeah, so lowering prescription drug prices, again, I'm something I've worked on since I got there. The seventh bill that President Biden signed was a bill that we wrote on the House side and finally got it across the finish line. And what it does, it helps biosimilars and generics get to the market sooner. So it was taking 10 to 12 years for generics to go through the FDA process. And we've streamlined that process. And I really think one of the reasons some of the prices are coming down for, say, diabetes is that a lot of those biosimilars are now on the market as well. So that's coming to fruition. The other piece of this puzzle is something called pharmacy benefit managers. They're a middleman that stands between the pharmaceutical makes it and your community pharmacist. And they take about 50 cents of every dollar. Three of them control about 85% of the industry. And they're running my community pharmacists out of business. So believe it or not, this is something Bernie Sanders and I are working on together. We've passed quite a bit of legislation through the Senate Healthcare Committee already. And in 1 or 2 weeks, we're going to put the final nail in the coffin on blowing up these PBMs. And hopefully Chuck Schumer will let us vote on that. And I'm not sure he will, because this will hurt some of his people in New York.
I have a question about the United States Supreme Court. Do you favor term limits? And also, what about a code of ethics for them?
Right. So on the code of ethics thing, I think that they should write their own and they should enforce it. I think the last thing you want are, I wouldn't want the Supreme Court managing our code of ethics and back and forth. So I think that they should have their own code of ethics and hold themselves accountable. And I have faith that they could do that. A term limit thing, you'd have to change the Constitution. And if that's what the will of the people was, I wouldn't object to it, but I don't favor it personally. I think the system's not broken. I think we should just leave it like it is. My biggest fear, though, is the Democrats want to pack the court. If they control the Senate, the House, and the White House, they will pack the court. They will add 3 to 6 more judges so that then they can make Puerto Rico and Washington, D.C. states. And that's going to allow them to do a whole lot of things that you don't want to see.
You know, just a follow-up. Our politicians in city council in Sedgwick County, they have term limits. What about folks like yourself?
Yep. So I'm all for it.
Term limits.
I'm all for term limits for congressional members. One of the first bills I signed on to when I was elected to the House was a term limit bill. I think it's way more powerful than I would have guessed. What I've seen since I've been there is, you know, imagine this, the longer you've been there, the more power you accumulate and the more this swamp invests in you. And I think that if you had the term limits, that investment wouldn't be so much on one person. If we knew it was going to be a different Speaker of the House every 4 years, if it was going to be a different leader of the Senate, different chairman, the chairmen of these committees are so powerful. If you could imagine the chairman that determines the Pentagon's budget, a $1 trillion budget, that's basically been, you know, controlled by a couple people for decades as well. So I'm all for the term limits. I wish I could tell you there was a path forward in the House and Senate. There's not. It would take a constitution of states gathering to accomplish that.
Shelley from Wichita says, our mail is unpredictable, and you've been talking about this. What are you doing to ensure we can get our medicine bills and other things and mail in on time? And just this week, Scott Schwab here in Kansas said they're still getting mail election results in from the primary, which was on August 6th, and it's September 14th, and the mail hasn't delivered them yet.
Yeah, it's unacceptable. It seems like we have thrown hundreds of billions of dollars at the post office without getting any better. As near as I can tell, the problem is in the processing centers. So you live in Hutchinson, Kansas, and you're going to mail something to Wichita, but it has to go to some processing center, and I don't know where the processing center is. Just where is it? So it's got to go to Kansas City Processing Center, and I know for sure that processing center has horrible problems. So about 6 months ago, we asked the Inspector General to go find out why, and it's absolutely in the processing center. They're short-staffed, and they're not following processes. Imagine that. Just, you know, the federal government's incompetent for all practical purposes. That's all I can say. Only 10% of the people, I thought it was 20, but it's only 10% of the people that work for the federal government in Washington are back working in person. We had the tail wagging the dog up there in so many ways. So it's incompetence. There's no excuse. Thank goodness there's some competition with them from FedEx and UPS and the others, or it would be even worse. But it's not because we haven't thrown money at it.
Tina from Newton, are you concerned about voter fraud? If yes, what measures are being taken to prevent this?
Yeah. So I think that election integrity is integral to the success and the longevity of a democracy. Election integrity is so, so very important. I remain concerned about fraud. I think it's a lot better today than it was 4 years ago, and maybe if I could give a couple examples of what we're trying to do at the Republican national level. Let me back up. First of all, states have made some tighter state laws. So that was the first step. Remember that the Constitution says states shall determine the time, manner, and place of how elections are ran. All right? So in Nevada, we still have ballots that can be collected up till 5 days after the election closes, which I think is horrible. Colorado sends out unsolicited ballots. I think whenever you're sending out unsolicited ballots, it's horrible for election integrity. On the other hand, Georgia's tightened up a lot of their state laws as well. I think that at the national level, we've brought enough attention to this that different states are starting to clean up their voter rolls. I think that's a big piece of it. But Virginia and Texas found out, both of them found out, that they had thousands of illegal aliens and people that had died still on their voter rolls. And so those ballots had been going out somewhere. Lastly, the Republican Party has hired hundreds, if not thousands, of people to go babysit the polls. Think about this. 7 states and 24 counties will determine who our next president is. We know who Kansas is going to vote for president. We'll get all of our electoral college. But it's going to boil down to 7 states and 24 counties. So we're sending election experts and attorneys to those particular polls and try to babysit them and make sure there's no shenanigans. So it's going in a better direction. But if criminals want to cheat, they're going to find a way to cheat. And it's frustrating for all of us.
Cheryl from Hutchinson says, we need a movement to get God back in our lives and get socialism out the door. More God, less socialism. Does that bode well for you?
Yeah. So amen. But the federal government can't legislate values, okay? The federal government cannot legislate values. And we don't want them to, right? But I agree completely with the premise of the question that we have turned our head away from God. And not to be preaching up here, but I think that it's time for America to say, you know, what have we been doing? Where are we going? And I think that we've lost some of the values that we were raised on. Values like faith and family, community that's so important to us, hard work and innovation. Those are the values I was raised on. And I think America in so many places are deserting them. And it's what I hate to see is coastal elites telling us what our values should be. This is why I said earlier, we have to get our schools right. At the federal level, what can I do? I think social media has become a very evil value destroyer. I'm afraid that we're going to, just like we had to put rules around pornography and make drinking ages and tobacco ages, we're going to have to make some rules for social media and help protect our kids from some of those attacks as well. So I think that would be one of my focuses, is what can we do to slow down the social media attack on our children.
CKM Hutchinson, if Joe Biden was too old, unable to serve, how will Trump do it with Vance possibly coming after him?
Right. So, I've seen President Trump. He's got the mind and the body of a person 20 years younger than Joe Biden. I'm just being frank. The guy plays golf every day. He works, honest to goodness, I'll get personal texts from President Trump at 5 a.m., at 1 a.m., and times in between. And it's him. It's his phone. I know what his phone is. It's from him. I mean, the guy never sleeps. He works his tail off. I've never seen him have an off day. So I think physically, he's in great shape. Mentally, he's sharp as a tack. And I hate to speak bad of the president, the current president of the United States, but I think we all know that he was having some challenges as well. But the point's well taken. And I think that's why it's important who our vice president is. And I have all the confidence in the world in J.D. Vance.
We're getting close to wrapping up here tonight. We do have some rapid-fire questions. Quick questions, quick answers.
Okay, wish me luck.
Favorite Democrat to work with?
Oh, gosh. So Kirsten Gillibrand from New York, she and I are working on things for WIC together and whole milk and things like that. So she'd be one example. She's across the office from us. We do prayer breakfast together. She would be one of many.
All right. What about the other side of that coin? Is there someone you see coming down the hall and you duck? You don't want to, or is the Senate more?
You'd be surprised. Yeah. It's much more congenial than you would guess. And I'm telling you, Bernie Sanders and I have a great relationship. They invited us to go to Vermont last fall. My wife and I went. We know what we disagree on. We're trying to fix health care together. So there's really no one. Chuck Schumer's really, really grumpy. That would probably be the one. I don't know if I duck, but I. But you know, Pat Roberts said, you should just say good morning to every one of them because it just drives them crazy. And I do.
Favorite thing to do with Kansans when they come to the nation's capital? What's recommendations to do in D.C.?
Yeah, nation's capital. I love doing a capital tour. Has anybody in the room done a capital tour with me? Done a capital tour with me? So I love doing that. Would recommend everyone go to the National Archives. I think it's a great hidden gem as well. Museum of the Bible. I've only spent 6 Sundays in D.C. in 7 years, but I struggle to find a church that I get to on a Sunday. So I'll go to the Museum of Bible even on a Sunday morning. Great place to take children and grandchildren.
Do you think the Chiefs should move to Kansas?
Yes, yes. I'm all in, and we're actually trying to do some things to make it work. If it happens, it happens. They're going to stay in Kansas City. It's a great storied franchise. My first game I remember watching black and white TV with my dad, Super Bowl I, Chiefs lost 35-10. Been a huge Chiefs fan ever since then, and we'll try to get him moved. I think if Missouri doesn't want him, we'll take him.
Don't tell us that you watched Super Bowl I. That gives away age. All right. You mentioned J.D. Vance, Trump's running mate. Just a quick thumbnail. What's J.D. Vance like?
Yeah, I think, first of all, J.D.'s from the same type of family that many of us are from. He was raised by his grandmother. His mom and dad weren't necessarily good citizens. Raised poor, okay? He was raised poor, joined the Marines, and comes back and goes to college and law school and writes a book and writes a movie. So he's still one of us, is what I'm trying to say. He knows, remember Bob Dole said, always remember where you're from. And that's what he would tell me. And I think it's great. You know, J.D. still remembers where he's from. I think he's wicked smart. I think he's really quick on his feet. He has the same policies as President Trump, so it is very, very sincere. He's a dad first. He's got 3 wonderful kids. He's one of us. He's a patriot. Loves this country.
It's been a fun hour. It's gone by fast. Is there anything you'd like to close with? Anything
great
you want to tell us about? You
know, I just think that, again, this nation is on this crossroads. We have to decide what we're going to be when we grow up. I think economically we have to decide, are we going to be an economy of competition where we reward hard work and innovation? Or are we going to be an economy where everyone gets a trophy and the government sets the prices for us, which is, you know, used to call that socialism or communism when I was in government class as well. So I think that President Trump has a very clear plan on how to address the economy, and it's involved with competition and innovation, rewarding those. I think that as far as the other crossroads we are we a land that believes in the rule of law or not? Are we going to be a land with a secure border that supports law and order? Or are we going to be a nation of open borders, a nation of defund the police and cashless belt? Kamala Harris coined those terms. She's the one that came up with these concepts of cashless bail and defund the police. Are we going to be a land that believes in law and order or not? And then the last one we've kind of addressed at a crossroads of who's going to set our values. Are we going to keep the values that we were raised on? I'm a 5th generation Kansan. I bet there's 6 generations of Kansans in here in this room now, maybe even a 7th generation. And those values have been passed down from family to family, to family. And I talk about my values of faith, a faith that I wear in my heart, not my shirt sleeve, a family that loves you and helps no matter what. It's not the government's job to help everybody who's in need. Your families are supposed to take care of each other. And then if they can't, your community helps. So that's my third value, is this sense of community, that believe it or not, I'd rather go to a Great Bend High School football game than the Chiefs game. That's still real important to me. Faith, family, community, education, a first generation college student, this you can be anything you want to be in this country if you want to. The opportunities are out there, and it doesn't have to be a 4-year degree. The average salary for our 2-year degree folks, tech colleges, community colleges, is higher than the 4-year degree in Kansas right now. And then hard work. This country's forgot what hard work is like. This concept of going to work on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, a 35-hour work week. Most of us, our parents, they work 60, 80 hours a week. There's nothing wrong with hard work. I think a job brings fulfillment and in so many ways as well. So, I can't wait till November. And the one thing I would impress upon you, that this is way more than just a presidential election. It is every bit as important who we elect to be our state reps, our state senators, who our school board members are, our county clerks, all those people, our district attorneys, our sheriffs. All those things are every bit as important. So October 16th, maybe I'll come on the show October the 16th, early in-person voting starts. And I got it in Great Bend and Stafford County. You go to the courthouse, and we need to figure out where in some of the bigger cities people go. But it's real important. I'm not going to tell you to vote for it, but I sure hope you go vote. October the 16th is when you can start the early season voting, as I call it. Steve and Ted, thank you for having us. KNSS, you guys have been, again, 20-year career. It's great to get to know people like you. It's more than just a job to y'all to keep doing what you do. That you not only you inform people. You know, I've been on your show enough that you're out there informing people what to look forward to in that day, and we just appreciate the great job you've done for us tonight. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. And by the way, that $350,000 a year helps. Just kidding. Ted?
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Thank you. Steve, thank you.
Once again, you've been listening to our town hall with U.S. Senator from Kansas, Dr. Roger Marshall, right here on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, live from the Kansas State Fair in the Encampment Building. Thanks for listening. Everybody have a great weekend. Enjoy the rest of the fair. Good night.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters, love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.